Yesterday, the talk was about this GEAR report, the Government Efficiency and Reform report. So I understand that you're somewhat critical of it with regards to its lack of specifications on Medicaid. Could you tell me a little bit about that?
Well, the concept that we came up with initially and worked with the governor was that we as a legislature were appropriating $4 million, $2 million over 2 years for the NC Year Group to go in and study and look at all areas of government, of administration that are under the executive branch and come back with the legislature with some recommendations on efficiencies that we could have and others. Our conversations at an earlier program evaluation meeting, our direct ask was that we needed bold proposals and changes. This was not designed for small movements. And my largest disappointment is that when the final report came back, the largest area of growth in our budget and probably the biggest problem for budget writers as a whole is in Medicaid in the Department of Health and Human Services, and they have no recommendations at all regarding efficiencies or improvement in the Medicaid system.
And do you think that the at least the intentions of having this group take a look at things was to look at Medicaid specifically?
They were charged by the legislation to look at all areas of the executive branch and the executive branch budget.
Okay, gotcha. So I know that you the Medicaid system is something that you know a lot about and are really passionate about. So, could you explain to me sort of your position on that? I think that you're sort of in favor of moving Medicaid over to private companies as part of Medicaid reform, but could you talk to me a little bit about that?
Well, actually, what the proposal is that we would that I've put forward and the Senate has worked on for several years is that we would change Medicaid from a fee for service to a payment to private entities on a per member per month level that would allow them to manage the care of individuals under Medicaid. It's one of the few ways most of the Medicaid in the state in the United States and other states is under a managed care system. It's been one of the few ways shown to control costs in the Medicaid system. And actually, what our proposal says is that we allow both provider-led entities, what are being referred to as ACOs, and managed care entities, which are generally insurance companies, to both bid across the state to provide those services for populations.
Okay, gotcha. So I know that you're opposed to Medicaid expansion, or I believe you are. Is that correct?
I've been very opposed to expansion under the current guidelines given by the federal government.
Do you believe that if the system was to be reformed, that Medicaid expansion could then be on the table?
I think Medicaid, the biggest barrier to Medicaid expansion being on the table has been the inflexibility of the federal government. Their requirement right now is that the only expansion they're accepting on Medicaid at the new funding levels are that you cover the entire population under 138% of the federal poverty level. We already have individuals from 100 to 138% of the federal poverty that are covered on the exchange, which for providers, the community, and for a transition is the best position for those individuals to be on. And we have no ability to craft a particular solution that would fit North Carolina's needs.
What about these reports now? We see as competing reports, obviously, but there are some that would say an additional 400,000 to 500,000 people would get covered if Medicaid was expanded. I mean, and that's a those are a lot of people that would then get coverage. And so, what is the reason for not just going ahead and doing that?
Well, Medicaid is a large program in the state of North Carolina now. We have almost 2 million people, about one-fifth of the population, already covered under Medicaid. In any given year, about 55 to 60% of the births in North Carolina are covered under Medicaid. So it's a large coverage system in North Carolina as well. And the biggest barrier is to take expansions of 400,000 or more individuals onto Medicaid is the ultimate cost to the state. The federal government comes in for a few years and offers 100% of the cost of services, but will only cover 50% of the cost attributed to administration for those individuals. It also doesn't cover any individual that now qualifies that it determines was previously eligible. And then over time reduces that match level down until 2020, it drops to their only covering 90% of services, and then there is no indication in the federal law what that match would be afterwards. But we have an obligation to continue that care at both legally and to the individuals we've provided service.
Do you worry that there would just be no extension or anything like that post 2020 or whenever that runs out?
Right now, the current match for Medicaid system is a 2-to-1 match, so right at about 65% actually is federal money, 35% is state money. I do not envision that the federal government would continue a system to where it would pay 65% of the cost of match for the sickest individuals, those with disabilities, the age blind, disabled, and pregnant women, but would now pick up and continue at a 90% match for the healthiest individuals it defined as the working individuals who were just under the federal poverty level.
Oh, I see. Okay, gotcha. Now, I just read an article in the Asheville Citizen Times that was about the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation report that said $51 billion North Carolina was losing out on by not expanding Medicaid. Now, they quoted you in that story saying that it was exaggerated, that it was probably more around $18 billion. Why the discrepancy in the way you see it and the way the foundation sees it?
Well, I think the biggest part you're looking at is they're looking at all the funds that are coming in through the system and through the federal government as being unique funds into the system, new funds that never occurred before. But what you have for a lot of individuals, particularly lower-income workers who currently have insurance, is you have a shift from individuals who will go from private insurance now to a Medicaid system, which is a free system of health care service. And the report makes no accommodation for the loss in funds that is going and the reduced rates that go to hospitals and doctors and others compared to what Medicaid pays, compared to what they were getting in private insurance, or the loss in revenue in the system that individuals were paying in premiums.
Why in that same article was the CEO of Mission Health here in Asheville, why was he in favor of expanding it? And he said that it was like a 10 to 1 amount that the state got back after what it spent.
I think what he is looking at is a match of federal funds that are coming in from what comes into the state versus the additional funds the state's going to have to come up. The loss he's not accumulating for is that which was coming out of the private sector, private pay, and those individuals who are currently insured.
Okay, I see. So what's the current progress and the prospects, do you think, of reforming Medicaid, do you think?
Well, I think if you look over the years, I think there is broad agreement in both the House and the Senate that we need to make this conversion from a fee-for-service system, that we don't need to be paying for health care on the basis of the number of x-rays someone can do or the number of ultrasounds that someone could do. And we need to shift to a payment system like a per member per month that pays for outcomes and pays for the overall coverage of an individual. It also frees up services can then be paid for by that entity that don't match one of the ICD codes. So it doesn't have to be a broken leg. They are free to make payments for services that may fix an individual's air conditioning in their home and those type of things that could deal with things they have with asthma or others that we just don't have the ability to do under the current fee-for-service system. The conflict comes into as to whether or not insurance-type companies should be allowed to participate in that system moving forward. The second conflict is the current management of the Department of Health and Human Services and what that structure should look like.
Okay. So I know you just came out of the crossover week, and a lot of issues were brought up then. What do you think? Do you think this is something that you're obviously, I'm sure you're hoping to get done this session. Do you think it can get done this session?
We are committed, and the Senate leadership has stated that they are publicly committed that we are not complete with this session, nor are we prepared to leave until we have reformed the Medicaid system. This system is growing, expected this year without expansion, at about $300 million. It would be about $400 to $450 million in growth next year without any changes in the services that's with coming in. That's greater than the additional revenue we anticipate to get in the system, so that everything we do in the budget is now having to be cut and controlled so that we can continue to pay for the Medicaid system that's going forward. And we just don't see that as something we can allow to continue going into the future.
Do you have any feedback from House leadership as to how they would go along with that?
House leadership seems to be much more committed to the coordinated care model that currently exists in this state, and to creating entities solely in which current providers would be the ones who are managing care for patients in the state of North Carolina.
Oh, I see. So it's going to be a discussion ahead, I guess.
It is.
Okay. Well, great. Well, so that we've taken about 15 minutes now. If you have a few more minutes, I'd like to ask you a few more things. I'm talking about the gas tax changes, the incentives program. I know the Senate and the House are differing, especially on the incentives program. Where do you come down on that?
Well, I think we've seen a huge problem in our current incentives program. I think we've seen a program that serves very well the needs of the urban areas of our state, that recruit jobs that come in well above the median income of those areas. But as we've seen over the past few years, its ability to be utilized in the rural parts of the state have been almost non-existent because of what exists. I think that I would love to see us move forward in making sure that our tax system makes us more competitive to recruit industries across the entire state away from this targeted system. But I know that targeted funds are part of the game in which we play in North Carolina, and we're competing against South Carolina, Tennessee, Georgia, and Virginia, who are all offering incentives to companies to locate in their states. And so we need to come up with competitive packages. But I'm much more interested in seeing that we have a competitive tax code to make sure that we're not having to come over, even in an incentive match, at times tens and multiple millions of dollars more than other states are offering, just to make up some of the difference in our tax codes.
Do you think that the proposal by Harry Brown as far as redistributing some of the sales tax and how they're distributed, do you think that's sort of part of the same effort, because you mentioned the rural areas kind of falling behind urban areas?
As a co-sponsor of Harry's proposal and others, I think it's an exceptional idea for the state. I think it's long overdue. I think that we should be putting the revenues of the state back to communities based on their population and not based on where they can build infrastructure and others to compete against other counties. I represent all six of my counties in Western North Carolina that benefit significantly from the changes in the distribution formula. Having served as a mayor, there's always complications in dealing with towns and counties and how that money would be divided between them once it comes to a county, and I think we've worked to eliminate that and his proposal as well, and I think it's a good step forward. I call it my second step back from believing we should just divide by 100 and give it to all the counties equally, but I do think population is a good way to distribute those funds.
How do you, I know that, of course, Buncombe isn't one of the counties that you represent, but they would stand to lose. So how does this, obviously there are going to be winners and losers in this system. How do you, I guess, sell this to those lawmakers who represent those areas?
Well, I think that it's part of the plans that urban areas like Buncombe have put forward. When I look at Madison County, who stands to great gain percentage-wise better than any county in the state, when you look at how Buncombe has expanded its development to be on the Madison County line right off of 26 in Weaverville and opened its Walmart there, opened a Lowe's there, so that the closest shop to individuals in Madison County happen to be in Buncombe County, which is giving Buncombe County that revenue and taking it out of Madison County. I think it's a perfect example of why the current system is a problem in the state of North Carolina. I think that when you look at what the unemployment rates is in Buncombe County and Mecklenburg County and those across the state, when they're looking at 4 and 4.5% unemployment rates next to counties that are dealing with 8, 9, and even 11% unemployment rates, I think we understand that this, we're making the case and getting an understanding that this is the best way to make sure we can be successful as an entire state of North Carolina and not just have some urban areas that are doing well.
Mm-hmm. I can't recall whether or not this is in a House or Senate committee today, but they're talking about changing the way the state funds DOT, basically, by sort of easing back on the gas tax some and collecting the fees elsewhere. What do you think about that?
Well, I think it's very difficult representing counties that both border Tennessee and South Carolina, where you have a tax system in place that results in 20 and 25 cent differences between gas tax for individuals who will drive to Tennessee or South Carolina to purchase their fuel. It makes individuals traveling through the state of North Carolina stop in South Carolina and make sure they're full so they can make it through North Carolina without having to pay that high cost that's in, because other states do things very differently. The counties pay for roads. They pay more for registration fees than others. And we need a more equitable system in this state. And quite frankly, I've yet to find someone who doesn't feel like we're paying too much at the gas pump and as well as too much of that being attributed to our state tax system.
Okay, gotcha. Do you think like things like toll roads might help, things you know, on some of the major highways like an I-95 or something like that?
I think there's always options for adding additional capacity with tolls. I don't think you'll ever see currently existing lanes and others being tolled. I think we also need to look at the ferries in the state of North Carolina. At times, the cost of a ferry for a single vehicle can run $45 to $90 for a single person and vehicle to travel the ferry system that we pay fully each time. I think establishing reasonable fees for those could begin to offset some of those costs. I think those are things we're looking for. I don't see that tolls have any real application in Western North Carolina just due to the nature of our roads. But I think as a system as a whole, those are things we're very open to.
What did you think about the abortion bill that passed in the House? As someone who sits on many health committees, I'm sure that it's going to come through your committees probably next. So what did you think of that proposal?
Well, I think it's very important that we look at the decision that exists to make an abortion is a very important decision. No one feels that should be a rush decision for individuals coming in. So I'm very supportive of the expansion from a 24 to 72-hour time period is on. I was very disappointed that the House took out the proposal to prohibit the state hospitals from performing abortions. We have long had laws on the book on both the state and federal level that prohibit tax money from being spent on abortions. And I think the fact that we allow our state hospitals to move money around and reuse their infrastructure money to still be able to perform that services is at least usurping existing law.
And is that's something that the Senate could potentially put back in, I'm guessing, right?
There's a lot of conversations we're having right now. The bill has left the House and come over. I'm under no illusions that it will stay the same bill by the time we finish it.
Okay. Oh, and I know that you're one of the senators who was initially opposed to the Dorothy Dix sale, and it's gone through today, as I understand it. It's got its final approval today. Now, why did you back down on that bill?
Well, we're not done with the Dix sale as of yet. There are three components to it. The first one dealt with the price the property was sold for. And I still believe the state made a big mistake in opening that up to only one buyer, only putting it up to the city of Raleigh and negotiating with them for a sale price. The $52 million price tag, I think, grossly underrepresents the value of the property and what the state could have gotten for it. But I do believe that's the biggest value that with our one buyer we're going to get out of the city of Raleigh. But the other two components we still need to work on and make sure is when the property was originally deeded to the state, his intent was that the property and the proceeds would be used for the services of mental health. We need to set up a trust fund in this state to lock those funds down and make sure that they're only used for the expansion of mental health services. $52 million will disappear quickly in this process of mental health, and we very much know that we need to expand our capacity to offer services for individuals with mental health issues that's coming forward. The second, the third issue that exists there is that the Department of Health and Human Services is located on the property, and there exists no plan out there for what where the Department of Health and Human Services will be located, what that cost will be to the state going forward. So that's something we're also going to continue to work on, but we have received assurances from the executive branch and from the City of Raleigh of their willingness to work with us on both of those issues, and we look forward to making sure those are resolved in this legislative session.
Okay, gotcha. Well, I think, you know, I've taken a lot of your time. I really appreciate it. Is there anything that we haven't covered that you wanted to discuss or any bills that you think are important that we haven't talked about?
I think that's covered most of the things that are coming forward. We've gotten some work done on limiting the federal EPA regulations that came through for Western North Carolina, that their attempt to regulate wood-burning stoves in individuals' house. And I represent counties like Yancey County, where nearly one out of every five households heat with wood stoves, and to start saying that we're going to make parts not available in others because their home heating device isn't compliant and run up the cost on individuals was something I thought it was very important to stop. We've passed that through the Senate, and we're waiting on the House action now.
All right. Senator Heiss, thank you so much. I appreciate your time.
Uh-huh. Thank you.